First of all, much is spoken about Yetzias Mitzrayim, but very little is spoken about Shibud Mitzrayim. And we once explained, you can find it in the Onik Shabbos for Purim, that if you don't understand the purpose of the Tzara, you will not ever be able to understand the real significance of any Yeshua. I will not go over the Moshel, but you can find it hinted to in that that paper a few times. So really, to understand the fact that the Rebbeinu Shem took us out of Mitzrayim, you have to understand why he let us get into Mitzrayim. What do we gain from being there? We did gain something from being there. Without going into all of the gory details, the basic idea is the following. The Jewish people have a mission to fulfill in this world, whether we like it or not, whether sometimes we accept it or not, we really have no choice. That was the mission that was given to us, and the Rebbeinu Shel Olam pretty much forces us within certain limitations to fulfill that mission. The mission is to be Mamleches Kohanim V'Goy Kadosh, to be a nation of Kohanim, God's servants, God's representatives, as we like to explain it, and a holy nation. We are not permitted to live the kinds of lives that the rest of the Goyim live, which is fine for them. They keep seven mitzvahs, and all they have to do is live moral, secular lives, and that's fine. We have to live holy, godly lives, because we are the ones entrusted with bringing the message of God to the world. That's our responsibility as a nation. And because of that, we're a nation that dwells apart. And Am Levodad Yishkom. We're separate from the other nations of the world. We can't assimilate with them. We are, whether we like it or not, separated from them. As the Reb Chaim Volozhiner says, we quoted every Tisha B'Av, whether we have two choices. Either the Jew makes Kiddush or the Goyal make Havdalah. Either we sanctify ourselves and separate ourselves from the nations of the world in that way, or eventually the nations of the world will separate us from them. But we're like oil and water, the two don't mix. That doesn't mean that we can't coexist with the nations of the world on a friendly basis. We can. We're very, very compatible, friendly with the nations of the world. But it's like oil and water. The oil floats on the surface of the water, but there's a small surface tension that separates them. They don't mix. They are compatible. They are able to coexist, but not to mix one with the other. We have a different kind of lifestyle. They have a different kind of lifestyle. And because of that, we're a different kind of nation. Everything that we possess as nationhood, Reb Sadia Gaon says, Einu Maseinu Uma Ela B'Torasa. What makes us a nation is our Torah. We have nothing on our own. What other nations develop because of common land, common language, common customs, common goals, common resources, and that's what makes nations into nations. What made us into a nation is God, and God made us a nation by the Torah. That's what makes us a nation. That's what a Jew is. Jews, Am Yisrael, is defined by the Torah. Nothing more than that. Nothing less than that. So we as a nation had to develop different than the other nations. We didn't develop because of what we are and what we have or whatever. We developed because the Rebbeinu Shem made us his nation. And the Pasuk says that clearly. Am zu yotzarti li tehilasi isaperu. This nation, right, I fashioned for myself, for my name. The Rebbeinu Shem made us into a nation. God created us as a nation. He made us into a nation. He gave us whatever we need to be a nation. We are identified, our nationhood is identified by the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. And because Tehilasi Yisaperu, because they have to speak my praises, just their being, Klal Yisrael, we represent godliness to the world, at least we should. It's interesting that this obviously is an idea that at least people who are looking for something speaks to them. I got a letter written to me a few weeks ago from a woman in Germany that she's coming to Israel and she wants to meet with me. Finally, she came here, she called me. She's a 47-year-old German Goya who's interested in converting. So I asked her, how do you get to me? Do I know you? Do you know me? Nope. I read something you wrote in the Jerusalem Post. I said, I never wrote anything in the Jerusalem Post. She said, yes, you did. Somebody quoted you in an article a few weeks ago where you said that the Orthodox Jews have to be an example in how they act to the rest of the world. So I like that idea. So I want to find out more about Orthodox Jews. Okay, and somebody did quote that in the Jerusalem Post. When I spoke at the Aguda convention, was Jonathan Rosenblum quoted a few weeks back in the Jerusalem Post. So I've got to watch what I say over here, because I see that even if I don't intend to have anybody hear it, things like this are heard. And I haven't met with this woman yet, but we'll see what comes from an article being quoted in Jonathan Rosenblum's column in the Jewish Post. Has effect on somebody's life, who knows, the olam void. In any case, that's, whether we like it or not, that's the case. And, if that's the case, so Klal Yisrael developed different than other nations, or it should have developed different than other nations. And that's what Lech Lecha means. Kodesh Baruch Hu told Avraham Avinu, Lech Lecha me'artzecha, mi'moladetecha, mi'beisavicha, el ha'oretz asher arekom. God tells him not just to leave physically Chutz Laaretz and come to Eretz Yisrael, but Lech Lecha Me'artzecha. There are three things that create the pivots upon which a nation revolves, what makes a nation into a nation. Every nation has its identity that separates it from other nations, its resources that separate it from other nations, and its goals, its purpose, its mission. Those are the three things that separate nations, that give them what they are. So the Rabbanu Shem tells Avraham Avinu, Lech Lecha Me'artzecha, leave your land, meaning your identity. People usually identify with the land that they live in, right? Americans are identified with America, and Russians with Russia, and so on. And I want you to leave your identity, Me'moladetecha, your birthplace. When a person's born, a lot of what he's going to be, rich, poor, what resources are going to be at his command, are determined where he's born, when he's born. That's called mazel. His mazel determines his status, his level of living or whatever to a certain degree, and therefore leave your resources. And Beit Avicha, your father's home. If God just meant to tell Avraham Avinu to leave the geographic areas, then it should have been the opposite. First you leave your father's home. Then you leave your birthplace, then you finally leave your country. Right? When you leave America, you first go out of your house, right? Then you leave your city, and finally you leave the country. So why is the opposite? Because God didn't want him to leave just physically. He wanted to leave mentally. So you first leave your general identity of your country, then you leave your specific birthplace, and finally you have to leave the ideas and the mores of your father's house. And that explains why in Lech Lecha, once said this, I don't think I ever said it twice here, but it answers a big question in the Psukim. It says that after HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Avraham Avinu to leave, Lech Lecha, so it says, Vayelech Avraham, Avraham left. And then Vayelech Itolot, and Lot left with him. And by Avraham then, Shivim V'chamesh Shana B'tzeisa Michoran, Avraham was 75 years old when he left Haran. Next sentence says, "Vayikach Avraham et Sarah ishto v'et Lot ben Achiv v'et kol rechusham asher rochshu be'eretz Kanaan v'et hanefesh asher asu b'charon v'yetzu lelechet arz Kanaan v'yavo arz Kanaan." Next sentence says, "Avraham took Sarah his wife and Lot his nephew and all the people they converted and they left to go to Eretz Yisrael and they came to Eretz Yisrael." So obviously, right? It's redundant. It already said that Avraham left. How many times did he leave? Says he went, and he went with Lot, and he left. And the first pasuk doesn't mention Sarai. It just says he went, took Lot, and went. Then it says he took his wife Sarai and Lot, and they went. So he went already. What's the second thing? So there are different pshatim. I want to say the pshat like this, right? I mean, what would be the obvious pshat? The obvious pshat is he went originally with Lot, and when they were in the middle of the road, they said to themselves, you know, we forgot something at home. Turn off the gas, close the door, something we forgot. Finally it hit them. Sarai. Ran back. Obviously, that's not the pshat. So, why did they leave twice? The Netziv has an interesting pshat. I'm not going to say. You want to look it up? You can look it up. the Netziv says an interesting shot on why this double yitziyah, and it's a lesson b'chlal how to do mitzvahs. But that's not what I want to say. It says it didn't completely. The idea is the following, that since Avraham was commanded to leave both physically and mentally, the first pasuk speaks about the physical leaving. Avraham left. When Avraham left, obviously Sarah left with him. Ishto kegufo. It doesn't have to mention Sarah. Of course Sarah left. Sarah and Avraham are one. It had to tell me that he took Lot too. Okay? And obviously all this Talmidim or whatever for sure went with him. So it doesn't have to mention anybody else except Lot. Lot was a chiddush. He wasn't a Talmud of Avraham. He was just a nephew. He could have stayed with the rest of the family. He decided to go with Avraham. It's something special. Vayelech Avraham. Avraham means his students, his wife, everything. That's Avraham. And obviously all his possessions. So not to mention that either. Physically, all it had to tell me is Avraham left and that he took somebody unexpected, Lot, with him. The next pasuk is talking about the other leaving. Whenever it says Vayikach, by a human being in the Torah, Rashi says, Vayikach is lochem b'dvorim, to take somebody by words, to convince them. Because you can't take a human being by the hand, because you're only taking his body. When you're told to take a human being, it means kach et aro, right? Vayikach Hashem Elokim et ha'odom. Every place, Rashi says, kicha b'dvorim, took him with words. Same thing over here. Vayikach Avraham et Sarah ishto ve'et Lot ben achiv, doesn't mean he took them physically. It means they're on the road, and now he got them together. He said, look, God doesn't want us only to leave physically from Chutz La'aretz and go to Eretz Yisrael physically. He wants us to give up all our ideas, our identity, our resources, our everything, and get a whole new perspective of life. So Vayikach Avraham et Sarah ishto, he took them with words in order to achieve the second goal, the goal of leaving mentally also. Okay. Had Avraham Avinu achieved this, he was the foundation of the Jewish people. Had he achieved this without any problems, then we would have developed into a nation, totally built our identity, resources, and goal, God himself. And that's the way the Jewish people would have developed, everything would have been fine. But the rabbis tell us that Avraham Avinu did three things that created blemishes in each of these areas of the development of the Jewish people as a nation. Okay? Seems from Chazal that they were sins that Avraham was punished for, but that's not what it means at all. Because if it means that, it's very difficult to understand. But the Gemara says like this, there are three reasons. The Gemara asked the question, what happened that our forefathers deserved to be slaves for 210 years in Egypt? So the Gemara says three different opinions, which we will say are not arguments, don't argue on each other, but are complementary. Each one is giving a different facet of this idea. One, the Gemara says that Avraham Avinu questioned God. When God told him that his children would inherit Eretz Israel, he said, how do I know that they'll inherit? He questioned. Second opinion is, because he also in Gariya b'Talmidei Chachamim, he took people who were learning Torah in his home, right? He had a kolel, Avraham Avinu, right? He had, 318 people sitting and learning, or Eliezer, who equaled 318, or he had Eliezer and 317 on the book, something like that, right? So he had, 318 people sitting and learning Torah in his house, and he took them for 6 hours, and put him into his army to save Lot. When Lot was captured, he needed to go and fight the four kings who captured him. So he took his kolel, and he took them out to battle to bring back his nephew Lot. Because he did that, his children were punished. They were 210 years in Egypt. The third opinion is that when Avraham came back from that battle, and he brought back all the booty that he had saved, that they took away from the people of Sodom, and he brought back the people of Sodom themselves who were captured. So the Melech of Sodom said to him, look, you give me the people, you can keep the wealth. And Avraham Avinu said, I won't take anything from you, not a shoelace, nothing. You take everything. So the Gemara says Avraham Avinu should have responded differently. He should have said, you take the money, I'll take the people, because I want to bring them home, and I want to put them into my, Or Sameach, Eishat Torah program, and bring them and make them into believing people. Right? I want to take these people and be makariv them. And since he wasn't makariv them, tachas kanfei hashchina, he gave up these people, let him go back to Sodom with the king of Sodom. So therefore, his children were punished to be slaves in Egypt for 210 years. So there's a few. If you understand it like that, it's impossible to understand for two reasons. One is, if Avraham Avinu did something wrong, let him go to Egypt for 210 years. Why his children? Lo yum suav, children don't get punished for their parents do, right? Let Avraham be punished. He did three things wrong. Let him get three punishments. Why generations later the Jews have to be in Egypt for 210 years because of something Avraham Avinu did? It's a personal thing. One question. Second question, that would be good if it was a sin. It wasn't even sins. He didn't do anything wrong. In any of these situations, he didn't do anything wrong. First situation, he questioned God. Sounds terrible, but that's not what he said. He didn't say, God said to him, your children are going to inherit the land of Israel. And Avraham said, go away, you pull my leg. I don't believe a word of it. How do I know? Right? Prove it to me. That's not what he said. Because that what he said, God should have answered him differently. All he said was, Bamo Eda. Bamo means, with what merit will the Jewish people get Eretz Yisrael? That's a big thing. Why do they deserve it? What merit do they have? And the Rabban Hashem understood that's what he meant, because that's what he answered him. He told them the merit of sacrifices, self-sacrifice. Right? That's the merit that they have. Okay? So because Avraham Avinu said something that appears to be questionable, that's why they were slaves in Egypt for 210 years. He didn't do anything wrong. All he said was, what merit do they have? God understood that's what he meant, so where's the sin? He questioned God. Second thing, what did he do? He took his Kolel people into the army, right, for how long? For 6 hours. Okay? Now, what should he have done? Gone on his own? Not saved Lot? Pikuach nefesh. Somebody's life is in danger. Okay? That's one aspect. But even more than that, it wasn't just a question of Lot's life. Okay? It was a question of a tremendous Chilul Hashem that was happening here. The Medrash says that Lot and Avraham looked exactly alike, and Nimrod, who captured Lot, put him in a cage, gagged him, and went parading him around like they do to prisoners of war, and said, you see, I conquered Avraham. Here he is in the cage. His God, obviously, is not true, because here he is. And nobody could distinguish between Lot and Avraham, especially if he couldn't talk. So people have assumed that he Taka captured Avraham, put him in a cage, and that's it. So it's tremendous Chilul Hashem. But even without that, it was a matter of life and death. Lot's life was in danger. Pikuach nefesh. So somebody's learning Torah, and there are people's lives in danger on the spot, and the only way you can save them is by stopping to learn Torah. You stop to learn Torah. It's clear. Right? That's for sure the halacha. What should Avraham Avinu done? Not take all of them? I mean, he was going to fight four kings, four empires that just conquered five empires. With 318 people, it was a miracle. So, ain't some Kamala Nation, take as many as you can. It's all the people he had in his house. All the able-bodied men had to go out. And if it was only Eliezer, surely, once you go himself, he shouldn't take another person. So what was the problem? That's the halacha. The halacha is that you you stop learning Torah, you go save a life. How long did he keep them out? A month? 2 months? Wasn't it a six-day war, a six-hour war? Right? That's all 6 hours, half a night saving. Right? Could be those guys didn't show up at the Chalav Night Seder, so it didn't do anything. So it's like, how much should he do? One half a night. So what's the sin? And the third thing also, right? He brought all these people back from Sodom, and never, what's it called, Avraham Avinu should have taken them home and tried to make a car of them. Okay? Who are these people? These were not just, you know, misguided intellectuals that Avraham could bring, you know, put into a nice program of Kiruv or whatever. These were the dregs of humanity. These were the people of Sodom, who a few pages later in the Chumash get totally destroyed, wiped off the face of the earth, because they were the worst of the worst. Okay, so Avraham Avinu should bring all these people into his house, and what's going to happen to the people he was Makarim? Right, all of a sudden, he'll bring a multitude of people into his Baal Tshuva Yeshiva, who are drug addicts, right, perverts, everything you can imagine, right? And what's going to happen to his yeshiva? Right, they're going to be mashpi on the other ones. He'll lose everybody. He can't be mashpi on these people. So he told Melech Sodom, take them back. You can have them. Right? I can't deal with these people. So what was the sin? What should he have done? start another yeshiva for the dregs of humanity, for the people of Sodom who were destroyed a few pages later. They obviously were not exactly, you know, really great material to be mashpia. So he couldn't. So he gave him back to Melech Sodom. What was the problem? Now the answer is that it's not that Avraham Avinu sinned, and because he sinned, his children were punished. On both sides, doesn't make sense. He didn't sin, and even if he had, why should his children be punished? The idea is completely different. And that is that each of these things didn't constitute a sin insofar that he did something wrong that deserved the punishment, but it constituted a chate. Chate doesn't mean sin. I don't know what sin means, to tell you the truth. I don't know what the etymology of the word sin, but it doesn't mean what we think when we think of sin. Sin means you did something bad. What it means, chate means chesaron. Something's missing. Something's imperfect. What Avraham Avinu did created an imperfection in the foundation of the Jewish people, in each of these areas of nationhood. First one, Avraham Avinu questioned, what merit do the Jewish people have that they should be able to get Eretz Yisrael? That in itself created a question mark as to what the identity of the Jewish people is. I'll tell you why. And again, so who heard it? It was between God and Avraham. But Avraham was the foundation. On him, the Jewish people was built. What he had within him, his genetic makeup, his spiritual genetic makeup, was the foundation. What went into Klal Yisrael was what was in Avraham Avinu. So if in him there was even the slightest doubt, then there was already an imperfection in the identity of the Jewish people. How so? Because why do we have to get Eretz Yisrael? Why is Eretz Yisrael for Klal Yisrael? Right? Because we and Eretz Yisrael are the same. We are one and the same. We are two aspects of the same idea. Why? Just very simply, we are a people of God. We're God's holy people who have a special direct relationship with Him. That identifies the Jewish people. That is our identity. We are a holy people of God's representatives who have a special relationship with Him. What is the description of Eretz Yisrael? It's a holy land, right? A place where God's presence can be felt and has a special close relationship with God. Eini Hashem Elokecha Ba, God's eyes are there all the time. Okay, so this is a holy land, a place where God's presence can be felt and has a special close relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam, direct relationship. That's exactly what we are. So that's what the Medrash says on the Pasuk, Omad Vayimodeid Aretz, the Ribbono Shel Olam measured every land, and he found no land more suitable to the Jewish people than Eretz Israel, and no people more suitable to Eretz Israel than the Jewish people. We fit each other like a glove. Now, if Avraham Avinu says, well, what merit do the Jewish people have to get Eretz Israel? What does that seem to imply? That we don't fit each other like a glove. That we need some kind of external merit to get Eretz Israel. That means that Am Yisrael and Eretz Israel are not the same thing. Because otherwise you wouldn't need something extra to get the land. It just fits us naturally. So by asking that question, Avraham Avinu created a blemish in the identity of the Jewish people. And God's answer to him was, they don't need anything extra. They need karbonos. Karbonos isn't an extra schus. Karbonos is expressing your essence. All they have to do is express their essence. They have Eretz Yisrael. Don't do anything more. If they'll give me over their essence, they have Eretz Yisrael, because their essence is Eretz Yisrael. By questioning that maybe we need something more, then that put into question what is the identity of the Jewish people. If it's not Eretz Yisrael, if that's not the same identity, and then we don't need any extra of merit, then what is our identity? So in the identity of the Jewish people, there's a blemish, a hairline crack in the foundation of our identity as a people. Second thing, Avraham Avinu took these people into battle. That's what he should have done. Didn't do anything wrong. The halacha is that they have to stop learning or whatever. But the greatest resource that the Jewish people have is people sitting and learning Torah. That's our greatest resource, because Torah is our greatest strength. Right? It brings us physical brachas. All our physical resources come in the schus of Torah. For a Jew, that's why we have material benefit. That's why we have protection. Right? There are those that say, I mean, the unfortunately, it's not just the chiloni, the secular world, but there's even religious Jews in quotation marks that say the same thing. I mean, why are all these people sitting and learning Torah? They're a burden on the Medina. What do they do? A bunch of parasites. The emes lamito is that the whole Medina probably exists, and this is what Gedolim have said, because of these people sitting and learning Torah. Because the Medina, like it or not, has supported Torah in a tremendous way. Right? I mean, I don't know if there's been any country in history that's ever supported Torah, right, in the amount, even if it's not enough, but in the amounts that's been since the beginning of Medinat Yisrael, the amount that the Medina has put into Talmud Torah is phenomenal. And it's probably, that's the reason why Medina still exists. And that's why it has some kind of economy, for better or for worse, but there's something here. Right? And the fact that we've won the wars that we won is probably in the schus of those people sitting and learning Torah. Not probably, for sure. So the schus the Medina has is because of these people sitting and learning Torah. So the greatest resource, and it flows into everything else, physical, material, protection-wise, everything is people sitting and learning Torah. Now, if Lot had to be captured in such a way that Avram had to take these people, the halakha was he had to take them. But the fact that he had to take them left an impression that the resources of the Jewish people are not used for their ultimate purpose, but that they're used for something lesser. Right? Had they been on the right madrega, Avraham Avinu been on a higher madrega maybe, then Lot wouldn't have been captured. So it wouldn't have necessitated the 6 hours of Bittul Torah. But the fact that he wasn't on that higher level, there was something missing, necessitated that Lot should be captured, these people should have to be taken away from Torah, even though that's the halacha. But ideally it would have been better. Would better if they hadn't had to be taken away from learning Torah. Right? The Gemara says, Gedola Talmud Torah Yosur Mi'atzolos Nefashos. Talmud Torah is greater than saving lives. That doesn't mean that if you have to save a life, you don't stop learning Torah. You do. But it doesn't mean that saving lives is greater than learning Torah. It's not. Just like Pesach night, let's relate to something to Pesach now. Pesach night, right, you have to eat matzah. Usually while you're sitting there chewing on that matzah for 2 to 9 minutes, right, you are not learning Torah, okay? You're thinking about the mitzvah of eating matzah, but you're definitely not learning Torah. You're thinking about how am I going to swallow all of this or whatever, right? At some point, you're not learning Torah. So how do you stop learning Torah? Learning Torah is infinitely greater than eating matzah, much greater mitzvah than eating matzah. So the Chor, why don't you keep learning Torah and forget about eating matzah? You know why? Because God wants you to eat matzah. The same God that said learning Torah is greater than eating matzah said, this night you better eat matzah. I want you to eat matzah, even if it means stopping learning Torah for a minute, 2 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever it is, I want you to eat matzah. Okay? That doesn't mean that eating matzah is greater than learning Torah. It's not. But that's Ratzon Hashem. What God's will is that you do the lesser thing. You won't get as much reward. It doesn't have the same effect. But I want you to do the lesser thing. That's God's will. The fact that Avraham Avinu was on a level that necessitated these people doing something of a lower level than what they could have been doing, even though that was what was supposed to be done. Something was wrong. There's something blemished in the resources of the Jewish people that they had to be used for something lesser than their ultimate. So there was a blemish in the resources of the Jewish people, that they're not totally to God. Something epistemic. And the third thing also, what's the goal of the Jewish people? The goal of the Jewish people is that they should be a people who bring the world to a recognition of God. True, Avraham Avinu, under the circumstances, had nothing he could do. These are not the kind of people he could relate to. But that in itself is something wrong. Then it shows, if you had to give them up, that it put into question what the goal of the Jewish people is. If the goal of the Jewish people is to bring the whole world to believe in God, how do you give these people up? Even though it could be explained or whatever, but something's missing. You see that there's a blemish. There's a hairline crack in how it appears what the goal of the Jewish people is. So both in all three areas, in the identity, resources, and goals, there was a blemish. What happens when there's a blemish, yeah? Well. No, that was the blemish. The question is, why is that a blemish? That's what he should have done. But the fact that it had to come to that, and Lot had to be captured altogether, and these people couldn't stay and sit and learn, right? That the fact that he wasn't on the level that Lot shouldn't be captured and have to take these people and put them in the army, right, then that was the blemish, right? There wasn't, he didn't do anything wrong by putting him in the army, so he didn't do anything wrong by asking about Mo'eda. Yeah, fine, but that's what it means. It doesn't say anywhere that he did something wrong by doing that, but that fact itself was going, right? That fact itself doesn't say that the fact is that he did the shalok halacha. He did that. That's what caused it. That might have caused it. Why it causes, not because he did something wrong by doing that, because that was necessitated. That's what. Okay, it doesn't say anything different than the Gemara says. Gemara doesn't say the reason why that was Goren, just said that was Goren. So that's the only same thing, was Goren. Well, no. Asoin gari b'talmidei chachamim is the reason. I did what the right thing, yeah, but the fact that he had to do that was the problem. Okay, yeah. Yeah, but force in a situation is based on your level, too. Okay, in any case, what do you have when you have a hairline crack in the foundation of a building? So you can't put in super glue, right, or plaster or cement, and it won't work. Not in the foundation. The fourth floor, yeah, but not in the foundation. In the foundation, what you have to do is strip away the part that's cracked and relay the surface. Therefore, not that the whole foundation was no good, chas v'shalom, the office for the foundation of Klal Yisrael, but in that foundation was a place where there was a hairline crack, that part had to be eliminated and then reset. So therefore, the Rabbanu Shalom had to find a way to strip the Jewish people of their identity to a certain degree, of their resources and of their goals, and then to reset them totally built on God, by God, for God, right? And then reset that foundation. Therefore, he told Avraham Avinu, "Ger yezaracho be'eretz lo lohem." Prophetically, he told him, "I see that it's not going to work. There's going to be problems. There's going to be blemishes in this foundation, and therefore I'm going to have to reset the foundation. So your children are going to have to go through three things: geirus, being strangers in a land that's not theirs, that takes away your identity. You become swallowed up by the host nation and to a certain degree lose your identity, even though they didn't lose their identity completely in Mitzrayim, but partially they did. They didn't have an identity of a nation, they were swallowed up by another nation. They maintained their language, their dress, and so on, but their nationhood was lost. They were swallowed up by another nation. Their resources is the second thing. Geri yezarach ha-beretz va'avodum, they will be enslaved, they have to serve that other nation. Slavery takes away your resources. Even your body, your time, is not yours. So you have no resources. Mashe kona eved kona rava, whatever an eved owns and earns is his master's. So that took away their resources. The inu osam, and they will be persecuted. Inui, the Torah describes as avodas perech, backbreaking, debilitating labor. We've explained many times that when is labor debilitating and backbreaking and it breaks you, negative, when it has no purpose. When you work and there's a purpose in what you're working, then it's the work is very exhilarating. When you work and you see no results, no purpose, then it's avodas perech. That was inui. So the idea of inui is work without a purpose. So that took away their goals, their purposes. So geri yezaracha, for that portion of time that they were just strangers in a land not theirs, took away their identity. Va'avodum took away their resources. They were avodim, no resources of their own. And inui took away their goals. And after the Rabbanu Shalom saw that it was stripped enough away, so he rebuilt them. Except before he rebuilt them by taking them out of Egypt in a minute, in a second, and creating a nation, giving them an identity, giving them resources, and giving them goals, God-given, and now building that nation into a nation on those three foundations, unblemished. First, he wanted to show them they should appreciate what a nation whose foundation is the antithesis of this. Egypt. Egypt was the opposite of what Klal Yisrael was supposed to be. We're supposed to be a nation that totally depends and relies and is based on God. They were a nation who were totally dependent, based on the opposite of God, on their own. Right? They even claim to create the world. Li Hayor, Pharaoh said, I made the Nile. Right? They were self-made people. They controlled everything. They even had magic. They can control the spiritual world. They can control nature. They can do everything. And they believed that was no power that made them. They were self-made people. Right? They were totally self-made people. So God wanted to show the Jews, besides what he wanted to do to the Egyptians, that a culture, a nation that's based on the opposite of what you're supposed to be, how bankrupt, how disgusting it is. So then, by understanding how negative the opposite is, they could really appreciate what their nationhood was. So he brought the Esar Makos in three groups. The first group, Tetzach, Dam, Tzvardeya, Kinim, showed the identity of the Egyptians being something putrid, bankrupt. Okay? Because the Egyptians identified basically with two things, the Nile and the land of Egypt. So the first two Makos hit the Nile, the water turned to blood, and the frogs, the putrid frogs, came out of the Nile. And the third one hit the ground, the earth, turned into Kinim, into lice. So that affected their identity. If we had more time, which we don't, we once spent a whole Pesach speaking about the Esar Makos, and relating it both in theory, in theme, how each one accomplished this three parts of identity, three parts of resources, four parts of goals, and we related it to the fact that the 10 plagues correspond to the 10 utterances that the world was created, the 10 commandments, and the 10 nisyonos of Avraham Avinu. And we showed how they all relate. It was a long drasha. It was not one. It was, I think we did it over Pesach for hours, one year, many years ago. Someday maybe we'll read some point, but not now. And I can just take my word for it, though, that just to give you a cute idea, okay, just the first three quickly, so you can see how it works. The first plague, Dam, what happened? The identity of the Egyptians was the Nile. They identify with the Nile, okay? And what did God do? He took the waters of the Nile and turned them into blood. Okay, the symbolic meaning of that could be the following. Okay, a person, God made a person. Okay, he gives us our basic identity of life, which is the blood that we have. Okay, God created our blood, and that's the nefesh, that's the life force of a person. Obviously, we didn't make it. God made it. We start off with that, and basically, it's a closed system. Unless you need transfusions or whatever, which is unusual, you go with the same blood through life. Yeah, okay, it produces more blood, what's it called? But it's a closed, it's like it is worry-free batteries. You don't have to keep, checking your blood and seeing if you need to drink a little bit more to add to your blood. Your blood takes care of itself, the level stays, right, closed system. But God wants us to be dynamic. He wants us to also be involved with our upkeep in our life. So therefore, he made it that we need to do things on our own also to enhance our life. That's called water. If you don't drink water, right, then your blood basically is of no use. So you have to add and enhance. That's the liquid. So two liquids. One liquid is God's part, that's the blood. And the other liquid is man's part, that's the water. What did the Egyptians do? They substituted man's part for God. They said, no such thing as blood, it's all water. Right, so they changed blood into water. They took what God made, and they said, that's not God done, we made ourselves. So they took God's part, which is represented by blood, and they symbolically turned it into water. Consider it like water. So God said, fine, you want to change blood into water, I'll show you in the place where you consider your identity, the Nile, what happens when the opposite happens, where water turns into blood. Just as much as when water turns into blood, the blood will not sustain you, so too when you change blood into water, it won't sustain you either. Okay. And then that identity, if it's not based on God, becomes very harmful, bothersome, and putrid. That's the frogs that come out of the Nile. And finally, if you don't understand what your identity, you were given the whole world to be your base. You stand, the world was created for man, if he understands that identity comes from God. The whole world I created for you. You stand on the ground. The ground is there, the earth is there for you. But if you don't know what your identity is, then the opposite happens. What happens? The earth turns into lice. you don't have a place to stand anymore. I take away your right to stand on that dry land. I change it into lice, and the lice live on people. You become the earth for little creatures. Instead of the earth being the base for you, you become the base for something almost insignificant. You become the unimportant thing, and the lice become the thing that lives on you, instead of you being the thing that lives on the earth. The earth is taken out from under you, it's turned into lice, and the lice live on you. Okay, there's a lot more to be said, but you get an idea at least how it works. The next three dealt with their property, their resources, right? Adash, Orov, took away their homes, right? They trampled their homes, they had no privacy. A person's home is one of his major resources. The Dever took away their cattle, which was their holy resources, things that they worshipped. And the Shin took away their bodies. They couldn't function with their bodies, which is also a resource of a person, his body, his home, and his property. The last three took away their gold. Why? Because the first two took away their food supply. Borod and Arbeh took away their food supply, their immediate food supply and their long-range food supply. If you don't have a food supply, you can't continue to produce and to have goals. And Choshech took away their ability to function. If you can't function, you can't achieve your goals. And Makas Becharis took away their future, took away their major children of the next generation. You can only achieve your goals over generations, not in any one generation. And if your firstborn are taken away to a certain degree, what you can achieve is mitigated. So the last four dealt with their goals. The middle three dealt with their resources. The first three dealt with their identity. And once God showed the Jewish people how a negative identity is, now he built them up again. They can appreciate a positive identity, an identity based totally on God. And he took them out of Egypt in three stages. The three Lashonos of Geula. I know there's Arba Lashonos of Geula, but it doesn't fit in with what we're saying. So we'll make it, but the truth is the Vilna Gaon, right, says that there are only Shalosh Lashonos of Geula. They're called Arba Lashonos, but there's really only three. And he says it like this. He says, really, there are more Lashonos, more, what's the word? Lashon is a, adjectives, descriptions, what? Terms of Geula in the Pasuk. Pasuk says, Valtzeis Yeshem, Vitzalti Yeshem, Vigoalti Yeshem, Vilakachti Yeshem, Vyedatim, Vahayisi, and Vahevesi Yeshem. So altogether, you want to count all the verbs that there's seven, right? At least there's five. Vahotseisi, Vahitzalti, Vigoalti, Vilakachti, Vahevesi. So he says, why don't you count the Hevesi? Right? Why don't you count the Vidatim? Says the Vilna Gaon, because those are after Vigoalti. Lashonos of Geula end with the Geula. So Valtzeisi, Vitzalti, Vigoalti are Lashonos of Geula. Anything after Vigoalti is post-Geula. That's not a Lashon of Geula, that's after the Geula. If that's the case, then Vilokachti is also after the Geula, so there's only three till Vigoalti. Valtzeisi, Vitzalti, Vigoalti. Says the Vilna Gaon, Vigoalti counts twice. Why? Because it says, Vigoalti Eschem, Vizroa Netuya, Uvishvatim Gedolim. I'll redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great judgments. So the fact that it says two ways means that the Goalti is to be counted twice. There's a Goalti with an outstretched arm, and a Goalti b'shvatim gedolim. So the Arba, the Shonos of Gula, really only three. Valtzeisi, Vitzalti, the Goalti, but the Goalti is mitpatzel, it branches into two different areas. According to that, there's really only three things. Just one of them has two parts to it. So it fits beautifully what we're saying. The Hotzeisi Eschem gave them back their identity, okay? Because they were taken out, just like being part of a nation, another nation takes away your identity, being separated from that nation, right, gives you back your identity. The Hitzalti Eschem Me'avodasom, I'll save you from their labor, that gave them back their resources. They no longer were slaves, they had resources. And the Goalti Eschem, I'll redeem you and give you purpose. Now, there's two ways that God gives us purpose. There's two things that could interfere with our fulfilling our purpose in this world. One is that Goyim come, and they prevent us from doing what we want to accomplish. That's one way. So God has Shvatim Gedolim, he has... Kriya. The God has an outstretched arm to point the way and tell us where we should go, what we should be doing. So there's two things that interfere with our fulfilling our purpose. One is that from the outside, and one is lack of motivation from the inside. So God redeems us in both ways. One, to give us the motivation, and also to prevent people from stopping us from the outside. If you think about it, okay, this is what we'll end with. The Seder, the Arba Lashonos of Geula, correspond to the four kosos, the four cups of wine at the Seder. And each one is a different part of the Seder, a different mitzvah that you do with that cup. So if you think about it, each kos represents exactly this idea. First one is the simplest to see. What's the first Lashon of Geula? Votzeisietz, I'll give you back your identity. What's the first kos? Kiddush. What does Kiddush speak about? The identity of the Jewish people. Asher bochar bono mikolam, v'roma bono mikolam. Exactly what we've been discussing. That's what Kiddush says. So the first kos, which is keneged, the hotzesi, which is keneged, the identity, is Kiddush. What's the second kos? The second kos is right at the end of Magid, right before you're ready to eat your meal. The whole table is set in front of you, the matzah, the mor, nothing's been touched yet, you've finished speaking about Yetzias Mitzrayim, you're ready to dig in, you know, and start doing the second part of the Seder. There's two parts of the Seder. Both have to do with the mouth. Right? There's two pays that are significant to Yetzias Mitzrayim. Pakot pakadati eschem. So the Sfarim say that that geula was represented by the double pay. There's two pays in the Aleph Beis, a pay pasuach and a pay sasum. An open pay and a closed pay, right? The end pay is open, and the middle pay, the one in the middle of the word, or the beginning of the word, is closed in. So what do these two pays represent? Pay means a mouth. So there's a peh pasuach, an open mouth, and there's a peh sasum, a closed mouth. You open your mouth when you talk. That's the first part of the Seder, talk, right? Talk as much as you can, right? And you're not talking Pesach night. That's what Pesach means, Pesach. A mouth that speaks. But there's a second part to the Seder, and that's the pesasum, the closed mouth. My mother, Aleha Shalom, used to tell me, when you chew, close your mouth. When you're eating, keep your mouth closed. Right? So the closed mouth represents eating. At Pesach night, you're only using your mouth, either to eat or to speak. Right? That's it. Right? Either you're saying words out of your mouth, or you're taking things inside. That's what the Seder is all about. Eating, speaking. Pesuach, pesasum. So, right now you're ready for the second part of the Seder, eating, right? You've just said what you had to say. So, you have all your resources before you. Second cup. Make a bracha al-yayin on your resources. So the second cup represents the resources. The third cup and the fourth cup represent goals. One represents the fact that the Rabbanu Shalom motivates us to achieve our goals, and the other one that he protects us from other people not interfering and deterring us from our goals. What's the third cup? Benching. Benching is exactly this idea. The idea of being motivated to fulfill our goals. Okay, what in the world does benching have to do with that? Because benching is not merely thanking God for a good meal. Because if that's all it would be, we should end it Hazonas Hakol. There's no need for anything more than that. Right, what is more than that? The next bracha speaks about Eretz Yisrael, Bris, Torah. Right, the next bracha speaks about Malchus Beis David and the Binyan of Beis Hamikdash. I mean, Lamaisa, all I ate was a measly sandwich. We have to go through a whole refresher course in Jewish history, right, for eating a sandwich. What does it have to do with the Beis Hamikdash, Bris, Eretz Yisrael, right? None, Malchus Beis David? Why do I have to mention those things? Well, the answer is that if I really want to thank God for eating, right, so if I thank him because it tasted good and I, you know, I feel good, I feel full, so that's minimal, right? Because it's not really that important. But if I want to thank God because I've extended my life a little bit, what's eating? I extended me. I made a little bit more of me by eating. A little bit more calories, I mean, more energy. So if it's just, well, okay, now I can go, you know, play baseball, right? Now I can live another few minutes. Also, minimal, right? How important is that? But if I put it in the perspective, okay, now I have more energy and there's more of me, what am I supposed to accomplish in this world? I'm part of the Jewish people, right? And by being able to live a little bit longer and have a little more energy, I can accomplish tremendous things. What are those tremendous things? Bris, Torah, Eretz Yisrael, Malchus Beis David, Binyan Beis Hamikdash ultimately. Now, food, eating is very important. Because by eating, I have a chance to live a little bit longer, have a little bit more energy, and in some way promote these great things. Now the eating is really put into perspective. Now I can really thank the Rebbe for eating, because my eating is very, very important. It has tremendous significance, eternal significance. Not just I gained another ounce. That is something much more important to all of that. So benching puts eating into perspective. If that's the case, then that fits perfectly goals. But it's the motivation towards goals. God redeems you and gives you the motivation to fulfill your goals. That's benching. And the last one is Hallel. What does Hallel speak about? All the times, all the goyim that would want to prevent us from fulfilling our goal, we thank the Rebbeinu for saving us from all these interferences, from all these threats at our, that threaten us not fulfilling what we can from the outside. So all the Arba Kosos represent exactly these points. Right? The first kos represents the giving back of our identity by God, the second kos our resources, and the third and fourth kos our goals, one from motivation from the inside, and the other one from being protected, from being deterred from the outside. Okay, so it gives a little bit of an idea of what we gained, why we needed Shibud Mitzrayim, and the outcome of it was that now we could receive the Torah. Now we could be God's people. Had we not been in Mitzrayim, we never would have been able to develop as a nation in such a way that we could have ever gotten the Torah. So by being in Mitzrayim, that enabled us to become what we are supposed to be then for all eternity.